Bonk.
Dan.
I have pulled you aside for this podcast. I have pried you from the icy, cold, hard grip of Elden Ring.
That's right.
It's, how many hours would you estimate you played in the last week?
Ooh, I haven't even bothered to look, but it's...
Every time you quit the game, it tells you.
I don't look. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I love looking at that.
Yeah, I don't... Because also with Steam, it's weird too, like, because...
Oh, not the same thing. In game, when you go to system and you go to quit, it says like that's it shows your level.
Okay,
and
I'll have to go look next time.
I wonder. I bet you're at like 50. What do you think? Does that sound right?
Well, I mean, I've been playing since this past Thursday, so I don't
many,
know.
Many hours a day.
It's been a lot. Yeah,
I'm at like 72 hours.
Yeah, it's a really incredible video game.
Yeah, yeah. I was telling you, I feel like it's a game that was like brought back in time from like 15, 20 years in the future, where it's like, look how crazy and in-depth and, like, you know, vast these games are going to get.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, open world games have become kind of ubiquitous nowadays, and we've all, you know, learned to or been conditioned to expect certain things, and, you know, there are really good versions of open worlds, like Horizon Forbidden West, for example. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, very high fidelity open world with a lot of beautiful vistas. That's, you know, a lot of the puzzle solving in the combat. I always thought was really cool in Horizon.
Sure.
But then Elden Ring came out and just is beyond a better open world game. It's an entirely new type of open world.
Yeah, even the good ones, like good modern open world games, like Dying Light 2 came out recently. That's a good game. Horizon, you know, good game. Fuck, everything just seems so old now. I mean, not that those games aren't good and that I won't enjoy games like that in the future, but it's just like, I feel like this is the new measuring stick, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I've expressed this to you, but I'm concerned about when I'm done with this game, what it's going to be like for me, since, you know, video games are at the center of my universe, and I don't know how any game can compare to this.
I mean, just in terms of sheer quantity and quality of everything, I mean, I don't think there's anything that comes close. Like, I know, like, I'm not the biggest fan of The Witcher 3. I know you liked it a lot. And that had really good writing and side quests mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But, like, would you say that this is still just, like, light years ahead of that?
Well, Witcher 3, like, I know this is weird, but, like, I don't really even consider that an open world game because it's not one single map. You know, it's, like, different zones.
Sure.
But that's a nitpicky distinction. I'm sure most people would consider open world. There were certain side quests in that game that would be, like, surprisingly deep and detailed and would really subvert your expectations. And, like, you know, it would have you make choices that, like, you wouldn't have all the information or you didn't know, you know, there wasn't a clear, this is a good choice, mm-hmm. this is a bad choice kind of stuff.
It wasn't a Mass Effect thing. It's like, do I save these puppies or shoot them in the head, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, the implications for your choices would often not be felt until later on, which is, you know, it's a completely different type of thing in terms of, like, that was, like, a written, constructed narrative. The narrative
true.
In Elden Ring, like, is kind of told without words. I mean, if you want to compare it to, like, Shadow of the Colossus style, where it's just kind of, like, there's not a lot of direction, there's not a lot of words. You'll meet people, but you won't be, you know, given explicit direction. Like, there's never any waypoints guiding you except for the ones that you make yourself.
That's true. I guess, like, a Breath of the Wild or Shadow of the Colossus is maybe more of a direct comparison than something. Like these more truly open yeah. world games, you know? Like, it's not a GTA where it's like, you know, here's the where you go accept your mission and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It is that Breath of the Wild or Shadow where it's like, here's the world, go figure it the fuck out, which yeah. I love that approach.
Yeah, and also, you know, if we're just to go back to Witcher 3, like, you're Geralt in that game, you know what I mean? You're an established mm-hmm. character, and there's not, like, as much as you can, you know, make certain decisions and make choices about what spells you're going to use or whatever, it's you're still ultimately being funneled down the same kind of well.
Yeah. I kind of like being the like faceless kind of like even more so than like a Gordon Freeman. Like he was silent, but this is just like, I don't know. You're tarnished. You're just a dude or a lady, you know, and go fight this stuff. You
yeah.
know?
I, you know, it's funny. I was thinking to myself as I was playing, like I've played so many video games where you make your own character and you travel the world with a character, whatever. And, you know, there's this idea that you'd kind of become attached to your character and upgrade them and make them look really cool with better armor and weapons and stuff like that. And yeah, you feel proud of what you can accomplish. But with my character in Elden Ring, which is another just like completely character created, like I player created character, I made that character. I have never been so much more attached, even though, you know, I'm not getting a bunch of crazy armor. I'm pretty much run around naked in that game.
Yeah, yeah.
Naked with my Wolverine claws. But like I just feel like we've been through so much together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, obviously I'm controlling the character, but like, it's like a bonding with this avatar that I've never experienced before. Like, I don't even want to change her appearance, even though there are aspects of it. Like, now that I see it in the game, it might, you know, it could change it or whatever, but it's like, we've overcome so much together, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I get that same sense of like, you know, growing with the character where it's like, you know, I'm a intelligence / magic focused character. And so, you know, I'll get these things early on where it's like, oh, you need to be level, you know, 40 intelligence to use this, you know, comet magic ability or whatever. And now that I'm getting closer to that, it's like, oh man, that's going to be such a, like, I've been waiting for this moment for, you know, 50 hours. Now I'm finally going to be able to have the spell I can use in combat. And like,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. The sense of accomplishment is just like, I mean, to say nothing of the open world, which would, you know, be a whole other discussion. Just like, obviously there's that thing where you're always working towards those smaller goals, like leveling up your intelligence enough to be able to use that spell, for example. And then there are the bigger ones, like trying to beat certain bosses and stuff. And, you know, I know that a lot about the game's difficulty, like there's been a lot of controversy about that.
Always is, yeah.
You know, and I completely respect the idea that everyone should be able to play any game in terms of like accessibility options. Like if you have some kind of, you know, disability that keeps you from playing like how everyone else does, like you should be accommodated. But in terms of like, if you don't want to play Elden Ring because you're afraid that it's too hard, or perhaps you had prior experience with From games and you didn't really jive with them, all I can say is that there's something about mixing an open world with that formula that, like, you ever play a game where if you use two spells or whatever, if you're, for example, if you use the same, like, type of armor in an armor set, you'll get a bonus.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that. It's like there's some kind of bonus that comes from mixing the From formula with open world. And it's just absolute magic.
Well, that's the secret ingredient, because like I feel like neither of us were like, you know, I think we respected From's games and the Souls games and Bloodborne and everything, but like we were never like fanatics about it. And like that was the secret sauce that they put into this one, where it's like, oh, put a vast, incredibly detailed open world filled with things to do and ways to, you know, not butt your head against the same thing over and over again. And then it's like, whoop, okay, I'm in, just completely in, like, and fully one of my favorite games of all time already.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. Like, I get that people would be reluctant to play it because it could be perceived as really hard. And it is a really hard game. It's a hard game.
Mm-hmm. I've died a lot.
You die a lot. Like, that's the game. You die constantly, all the time. From, like, rats will kill you. Mm-hmm. Like, everything in this universe can kill you with, like, one hit most of the time. But you... It's a game about overcoming that adversity and becoming better. And the fact that everything is so challenging, it feels so good when you get past those obstacles. And not to mention, too, like, I'm kind of experiencing this now where, you know, I'm not even that far into the game, but I just went back to the opening area. And, you know, I've progressed a lot since then. And enemies that used to kill me very easily, I'm now able to kill without, like, any hesitation. And it feels incredible. Like, I'm running around without fear, whereas, like, before, you're in a new area and there's, like, a ton of really strong guys, you're sneaking around and you're, you know, nervous about everything and there's this tension and stuff, but now it's just, like, you own the fucking fields.
These trolls that you were terrified of, now it's just like, oh, I'll go farm some trolls, you know, yeah. It's just an afterthought, you know?
Yeah, it feels incredible, and that's to say nothing of, like, when you actually do beat a really big boss, not only are you feeling that high from beating something that was really hard, but then you also usually get some kind of awesome piece of loot, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah,
like, that feeling is just... It's really special, and the world is so incredible. I could talk about this game all day.
You and I have talked many hours. We've laid in bed until like the sun came up almost, you know, talking about this game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think a lot of people talking about this game for good reason right now. Yeah. It is something very, very special. If you're into games, definitely check out Elden Ring.
Yeah, and if you are at all reluctant, like I said, because of difficulty, like don't be. Just try to get past it. Know that you will die a lot, but it's very worth it.
Indeed. All right, now I'm going to need you to transition from Elden Ring to The Fly. Oh! Well, I just thought of one right when I threw to you, but you go ahead. I'll tell you mine was going to be.
You said The Fly, so I feel like that spoiled the transition, right?
Shit. Yeah, everyone forget that part. Okay, forget I said that. I wish I had some way to edit that out. Bonk.
Yeah?
How do we transition from Elden Ring to the film we talked about?
Well, Elden Ring is a game in which even the smallest bug can kill you, much like David Cronenberg's 1986 thriller,
The Fly. Perfect. God damn it. We're just on in sync. I said on sync. Anywho, that's right. Cronenberg doing his thing. Gross business here with The Fly, 1986. I looked up because, you know, it's a name I've heard forever, Cronenberg. And I always got him confused with Verhoeven. I was like, which one did Total Recall? Which, confusingly enough, he was going to do Total Recall, and then it wound up being Verhoeven. But anyway, I was like, have I seen any Cronenberg movies? And I looked at his filmography here, and I think I'd only seen History of Violence, which I loved.
Yeah, that's a great movie. You didn't see Eastern Promises?
No. I know you like that. That's Viggo Mortensen as well, right?
Yeah, really excellent movie. Amazing knife fight in the shower scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see that sometime. I probably like that.
Yeah, I would definitely watch it again if you're ever curious about it. I really want to see that Cosmopolis.
What's that?
Cosmopolis. It's a Robert Pattinson, and it's one of those movies, from what I understand, that just like takes place in one location. I'd be curious about it. But yeah, his earlier filmography is definitely more like body horror.
Scanners, Videodrome, things like that.
Yeah, Dead Ringers, which is one of my favorite movies. Dead Ringers. So have I told you about that movie?
This one doesn't ring a bell. No, I know. I've heard you talk about Eastern Promises plenty, but not Videodrome?
Dead Ringers. Yeah. It's these two gynecologists, twins, both played by Jeremy Irons.
Oh.
And they pretty much just become addicted to drugs and just go down this crazy descent into just bonkers insanity.
Interesting.
I highly recommend it. It's fucking weird.
I gotta say, based on The Fly, I was into it and it was weird. So if that's Cronenberg's whole thing, it's like, man, this was great. And again, this is one of the 8 billion things seeing it now. It's like, oh, okay. Like, I know of this because of The Simpsons first. Mm-hmm. There is a Treehouse of Horror where Bart mixes with The Fly and things like that. They get a teleporter and Homer uses it, so he puts it right next to the couch so he doesn't have to go upstairs to the bathroom. He just pees into the teleporter and the pee comes out. The other end, at one point, he punches Lisa. He gestures into it and you just hear Lisa go, ow! So she's like sitting down going to the bathroom and just punches her in the face. But anyway, yes, this is one of the 8 billion things, North by Northwest and so forth. But man, am I glad I watched this, because when I think of like Goldblum, I think Jurassic Park, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. You know, Ian Malcolm, incredible character. And I've seen him in Independence Day. I feel like I've mostly just kind of seen Goldblum as like Jeff Goldblum, eccentric actor guy.
He kind of always plays that.
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like I almost know him more as the actor Jeff Goldblum and his weirdness and his appearances on Late Night. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's in the Jeff Goldblum business, and business is good, mm-hmm. it seems. So to see him very much playing a character in this, which, my God, the fucking casting on Goldblum is ideal. To just be this kind of like, you know, kind of brainiac, just kind of like eccentric, you know, just like, but then like the decline and into like mania and everything. Yeah. He kills it. This is my favorite Jeff Goldblum role now.
Yeah, he's perfectly twitchy and weird, and like he speaks, and his cadence of speaking is very much like bursts of words.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah,
it's like very perfect for this character and for someone who eventually becomes a fly.
Yeah. It was going to be John Lithgow was in talks to be this, but he thought it was too grotesque.
Lithgow from the Progresso Soup commercials.
Was he in Progresso Soup commercials?
He does, yeah. He's in Progresso Soup commercials, like still actively.
Oh, I was thinking more villain of Cliffhanger, Third Rock from the Sun, John Lithgow.
I don't know him.
He's a versatile man.
I just know his soup business.
That Dexter thing was good, the Dexter season.
Yeah.
It was one of the good Dexter seasons.
Yeah, it was really bad. It started to get really bad after that.
I think that was, yeah, I fell off like halfway through the next season.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, Lithgow. Good guy. Good guy. Yeah, me and John, yeah, our poker games. And also Gina Davis, which I've always found Gina Davis to just be an absolute delight. Mm-hmm. She is excellent. Isn't she like an Olympian archer or something too?
Is she? I don't know. I do like how she spells her name with the double E. That's unusual. I like that.
Oh, yeah. It's usually G-I, I guess. Yeah.
It's like... Gina.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I feel like we saw her in Glow season 3. She was in that.
Yes.
I never saw Thelma and Louise.
Neither
I. There's a lot of like Gina Davis filmography I haven't seen. I've always wanted to see The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh, I've never even heard of it.
It's like an insane action movie. I think it's like Sam Jackson and Gina Davis. I remember just seeing the commercials as a kid and being like, this looks amazing. And I think it had a really troubled production. It's a really weird action movie from the mid-90s. Someday I got to watch The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Oh, we should do that.
I would like that. It's got an interesting cast and everything.
Yeah. So. Her character, I thought it was really well done in this movie. She's very just kind of like... not like kind of like monosyllabic, like not doesn't really talk a lot, doesn't react to a lot,
skeptical of a lot of things.
Yeah, skeptical
of the doctor, and like, you know, they meet at this press event thing for this science company, and he brings her back and he's like, oh, you gotta check this out, it's gonna change the world. And she's just like, okay, sure, what's the smoke and mirrors? Like, just doesn't buy the whole thing, you know.
Yeah
I think she plays it really well.
I think the magazine she works for, it seems to be like a Wired type of thing, or like a science
publication. Yeah, like a science industry type thing. What was the name of it again?
Particle.
Yeah. And is it owned by, I'm confused, so there's Barton Science Industries. Well, that's the company that pays Goldblum, right?
Funding Goldblum.
And though Stathis, her boss, is, that's from the magazine that covers kind of like science and industry type stuff. Okay, that makes sense. So she's a journalist, he's a brilliant scientist.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Yeah, and actually that Stathis guy, the I guess editor of Particle and her former boyfriend, his character, like, he kind of has a heroic turn at the end, but like, he's kind of a creepazoid.
Oh my god, kind of. He's like, he goes in, like, they've broken up, but he still has a key to her place, and he like goes in there when she's not home to shower, and like follows her to stores and like accuses her of like moving on and stuff. Like, no, he's like a total creep.
So creepy. You know, I feel bad for Gina Davis's character, because, you know, she has to go to him for help eventually, because he's the only other guy that knows about the situation.
Yeah, because basically he wants to publish a story about it, but, you know, Goldblum doesn't want it to come out or anything. But basically, the first, I'd say almost half of this movie is a lot of, you know, him, Goldblum and Gina Davis kind of like forming this relationship and kind of tinkering with this idea of creating a teleportation device where it's just move something from one spot to another. That's entirely what he's going for. And like, obviously this turns into The Fly. It reminded me of like penicillin. Wasn't that famously like accidentally discovered? Like, it was like somebody was like setting like a flu thing or something, and there was like mold growing on something, and they wound up, it was like this naturally occurring antibiotic, and it led to like huge like breakthroughs. Like,
wow.
I think, penicillin was like a total accident as far as its discovery. So like, this reminded me of that, where it's like he is trying to make a teleportation device and makes a gene splicer, you know? Like, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I really liked the first act of the movie, where they're kind of like establishing the technology and stuff and what he's doing. And, you know, he steals Gina's stocking and shows her a little example with that. But it's just so funny to me, the concept of him like being fused with a fly accidentally, because it's such a small mistake to make, like a bug got in this thing, like it's but that is what leads to his destruction. I love sci-fi movies that go into like the hubris of the creator, you know what I mean, when they just think that they're just like going to be the most powerful person for creating this huge technology that'll change everything, but they're just blinded by their own pride, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and making dumb decisions. Like, the reason he decides to try to teleport himself before he's ready by any means is he's just, like, drunk, and he's, I think he's, like, suspecting that Geena Davis, which her character is Veronica Quaife, he's suspecting that she's, like, back with a boyfriend or something, and he just gets drunk and talks to a monkey, which, by the way, he has an endless supply of monkeys.
A lot of baboons.
A lot of baboons just hanging out that he befriends, and then turns inside out in grotesque displays.
The inside out monkey happens, like, not long before he decides to put himself in the machine, which is confusing. I would stay far away from that for a while.
Yeah, he does the baboon thing, and then that's when he starts bringing Geena Davis in to, like, taste test these steaks and stuff, which I thought this was really cool. And I love the way she described it. It's like, oh, it's like synthetic, you know?
Is this Beyond?
Yeah, that's how that was created, yeah. But yeah, this whole sequence, it's not quite a montage, but just like this kind of incremental, like, oh, okay, let's test this, and oh, we need to figure out living tissue and the skin and things like that. I thought this was all super cool.
Yeah, and then obviously that kind of phases out when he goes in the machine and gets fused with the fly. But there's that immediate aftermath of the fusion in which he kind of has, like, superhuman abilities.
I love that, and I thought about, imagine if I just started doing this stuff. Like, how would you react if I just started doing that, like, you know, just pushing myself up, you know, just some morning?
I would be very confused, and I would ask you what's going on.
What if I was just like, hey, I've been working out downstairs?
I would be like, really? I would be very, you know, I remember one time, this is kind of a tangent. I asked you if I just, like, teleported into the room that you were in.
Yeah, yeah.
If, like, and if I couldn't tell you how I did it, you said that it would ruin our relationship. Like, you said you could never see past that, which
well,
is
I think it
honestly
would just,
hurtful.
I think it would drive me literally insane if, like, you proved to me that you had teleportation abilities. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bunk, this is the most amazing thing that's ever happened in human history. Like, what happened? And you were just like, nah, I don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. No, you just teleported. You can't just do that and not elaborate. No, I don't want to. Like, I'm not saying we would get divorced. I'm saying I would just slowly go mad.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It would fundamentally change our relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be, I would just constantly be thinking about it. Like, I wouldn't be able to sit and enjoy a movie because halfway through I'd be like, she can fucking teleport.
Well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Dan Reichert wants to divorce his wife for her so-called magical powers.
This is a hypothetical situation. I would not divorce you. Absolutely not. I would just lose my mind. I love the, all of the effects in this are just, God damn it. You know, I think it's the general consensus with people that, like, good practical effects are missed. You know, like, people miss that. There's an over-reliance on CG. I think you do see stuff like Fast and Furious does a lot of, like, they actually threw that car through that building and things like that. And Mission Impossible, obviously. Like, that's always appreciated. But there is something about, like, mid-80s plastic, wet, gross, fucking writhing, you know, the thing and this, like, special effects that are just fucking awesome. And the guy that did it here, Chris Wallace, also did, it's W-A-L-A-S, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, he did The Gremlins.
Oh, wow.
It was just wet, plastic, good-looking practical effects. Mm. And it's like, that is such a mid-80s thing. Like, when he first turns that baboon inside out, and it's just this mass of fucking twitching flesh, it's like genuinely, like, disturbing.
It's
in
really
a way
gross.
That CG and stuff, absolutely not.
It's really gross, and it's not like over the top gross, which makes it even grosser, if that makes sense.
It looks like an inside out baboon that's, like, still kind of alive. It's like, just, like, freaking the fuck. It's fucking disgusting. And, like, even when they have to do things that aren't necessarily practical, like, you know, the actual, like, teleporter, like, you know, the, like, the shining, like when the stake disappears and stuff, it's just so subtly done, and it's not this big flashy CG looking thing. It just, like, kind of phases out and phases back in, and the smoke, and, like, oh, it's just, I don't have a single complaint about a single visual element of this movie. Like, it's fucking gross, but that's the point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. As his superhero powers eventually, like, turn into powers that are draining his entire life and existence, he starts screaming about the plasma spring. You remember that?
I love it. Hey, drink from the plasma pool, baby. It's like weird Kramer, but he's like coked out. He just seems like, oh, the plasma. Oh, yeah. This seems like Goldblum was given some, just, hey, just go say what you want to say.
Yeah.
And him Goldbluming it up, you know?
He's screaming about fear of the flesh and everything.
Yes. I love it when he's, like, leaving, and it's like, he's leaving to go to the bar. Like, he's just putting a jacket on, but he didn't put a shirt on. So he just goes into a dive bar with just this jacket with no shirt. I'm like, this is is awesome.
Like, he starts to become like obsessed with eating, I guess, sugary foods.
Yeah.
And when they show him doing his digestion process, which is just him taking the food and just vomiting this like thick white bile.
Donuts. Yeah. It's like all over it.
Which like I guess breaks down his acids that break down the substance, whatever.
Well, because you always hear that about flies. It's like that's why it's so gross if an actual fly lands on your food is because they immediately vomit on whatever they're about to eat. So like if a fly lands on your dinner, it's puking on your dinner.
Wow.
So that's why that's super gross.
Or super delicious.
My goodness gracious. Well, I guess everyone's got their different tastes, but I couldn't help but think of when he first went through the teleporter and stuff, and that feeling of like, he's like, oh, am I different somehow? Is there something different about me? Like before things are obviously different. It reminds me of when you got shocked for the first time about a month ago. You remember this?
Yeah.
You were like plugging something in and you got shocked and you were so freaked out and you kept looking at me and you were like, am I different now? Am I different? Did something happen? Do I seem like the same? Like you thought you fundamentally like fly, like went through a metamorphosis because you got shot.
Electricity was coursing through my veins.
I know. It's a fucking weird feeling. I'm fascinated by that feeling. It's only happened to me a few times because that's like, it's not pain, but your brain is very much being like, this needs to stop right now. This is fucked up.
Yeah, your brain really puts down the hammer and tells you to stop shocking yourself immediately.
Yeah, get your finger out of that socket. That's no good for you. God. But yeah, this whole sequence of like him at first thinking he's like rejuvenated himself or like his cells are all like, you know, I'm strong. He's doing all these like trapeze things and stuff like that. And he's like catching flies. Like it just seems like he's just on top of the world. And then like as the things kind of start like, you know, they're having sex and Geena Davis kind of like feels his back and there's like coarse, hard hairs coming out of. Yes, coming out of, he had a sore scar there or something. But yeah, this type of stuff. And like his face starts subtly, like before they even like draw attention to it, his face just starts getting like his skin is just kind of.
Yeah. It's like weirdly clammy and there's some weird, it almost looks like a rash going on.
Yeah.
I like when she notices the weird patch of coarse hair on his back and she tries to cut the hairs off.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, just. Wouldn't your instinct be to pluck them out, not cut them off? Like, just make them shorter? I feel like I would try to pluck
them out. That makes sense. And I like it later, too, when he's, like, trying to shave his face and, like, the razor's kind of, like, getting, like, I think the hair is too coarse or something. Like, that's cool.
And then there's the famous mirror scene in which he pulls his fingernails off.
And then, like, squeezes his finger and, like, pus shoots out. And it's just, like, it is aggressively gross.
It's really gross.
It's just his teeth are all like falling out.
As the movie goes on, his body like starts, it's like his body is like just literally falling apart, like melting away, transforming into something different and like, you know, falling off. It's just gross.
It's so unnerving. Body horror is I guess the genre for a reason, you know. It's oh my god. But before he's like totally fucked, I love it when he goes to this dive bar when he's just like in full-on like coked up mode or whatever, and Geena Davis is like, I don't know about this guy. The arm wrestling part.
Oh, God.
Like, first of all, these dudes, I just love 80s dive bar scenes where it's just like neon beer signs and like guys that look like that armor. It's just full on over the top dudes, you know, like love that. And then he just staring super intensely at the dude and then just snaps his fucking wrist.
God, yeah.
Just, and again, the practical effects are incredible there.
Yeah, it's really just cracks his wrist like where it shouldn't be cracked, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Part where, yeah.
Oh, God. And then he meets Tawny there, who's like, well, okay, you just grotesquely broke this guy's wrist, so let's go fuck. And so brings her home. They have sex, and there's a part where I'm so confused as to what this is. He's kind of being weird and stuff, and she's like, how about I give you a nice alcohol rub? Mm-hmm. And she goes, like, grab a bottle of liquor, and's like, what is an alcohol rub?
I don't know.
I have never, like, I get it in, like, Leaving Las Vegas when, like, you know, Nicolas Cage is like, I just want to pour whiskey on Elizabeth Shue's tits and suck it off. Like, that makes sense for the character. Yeah. What is an alcohol rub?
I don't know. It sounds like it probably burns.
I guess. I've just never even heard of that concept.
Maybe she made it up.
Yeah, I could see it.
Tawny seems like someone that knows a thing or two about alcohol rubs.
That's true, yes. Then Geena Davis walks in, catches them together, and this is one of my favorite parts. It's when he's just like, he's so confident that everything's great, and it's clearly not great. Huh, you think I'm sick? Does this look like a sick man to you? And just starts punching through the wall repeatedly. He's like, oh no, you seem perfectly healthy and sane right now. Ah, just like looking like shit, punching through a wall. Like, fucking loved that.
Everything's fine. Yeah, that scene is where the famous "be afraid, be very afraid" line comes from.
Yes, yes.
I was reading that, and much like the bucket list movie, I was surprised that this was actually the originator of that phrase.
Yeah, yeah, and same with like Alien, like you know, in space, no one can hear you scream, like these type of things we've heard a million times, even if we hadn't seen the movie or whatever. Like, "be afraid, be very afraid." I did not realize it came from a movie, but yeah. I at this point, like, Goldblum starts realizing that something might be wrong, and so he's like looking up stuff on the computer, and I fucking love some 80s computer interfaces in movies, and there's some top-notch ones in this. Lots of like just like rotating of like 6 frames of animation and neon, like, oh, I love it.
Yeah, and you know how much work probably went into like rendering every individual one of those frames, and it's like the most impractical use of computer power, especially back then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you don't need these visuals.
No, no, you don't what a fly looks like. We don't need this like zooming out drawing of a fly that gets progressively more detailed.
Yeah.
I also like the way they described it, where it's like, oh, he's trying to see what happened, and then the computer tells him like it was a fusion at the molecular genetic level. Which is so interesting, because like, I don't know, I guess if you think about a person fusing with a fly, it'd be like, oh, a fly's really small, a guy's really big, but like if it like broke everything apart and reconstructed it at this like DNA level, so like even though the fly is normally small, it's like over, it's part of your human sized DNA. Like, that concept is so fucking weird and cool to me, I think.
Yeah. If you had to be transformed into a fly sized person or a person sized fly, what would you choose?
A fly sized person or a person sized fly? I feel like if I was a person sized fly, I think people would be trying to kill me a lot.
Yeah, I would prefer being a fly sized person. I feel like I would be easy to care for.
But there would be peril constantly. Of being stepped on, like a dog could just eat you. Like Gizmo would just, if there's a tiny little person running around, Gizmo would just eat him.
But wouldn't you care for me and lift me up? So I
you be- yes, if I knew you were tiny, trust me, you would be. I would make a tiny little like a Polly Pocket world for you to like live in, like free of dogs and predators and stuff. Absolutely. But yeah, if you got on the floor, like those dogs would eat you. Totally. Yeah.
Well, hopefully it won't come to that.
I don't think it will. I think we're safe. We're in full on like Brundlefly moment here, where he actually calls it Brundlefly. His name is Seth Brundle. And he's just like climbing around again. Great. They probably did this through, you know, a room that they constructed and like, you know, made it so the gravity worked. So it, he looked like he was like climbing on the wall and hopping down. It looks amazing in the movie. And he is just so good at just these, like, he clearly watched a lot of footage of flies and was like, how can I do this as a dude? You know, like, and it's so, so good.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. I love too how, because he's a scientist and he's a guy that's like clearly obsessed with his work, like he sleeps in his lab on a futon, you know, he never seems to leave. You know, it's interesting to see his reaction as something that's like not like an existential crisis, but more just like, okay, let me see what happens now. Cause he's a scientist. You know what I mean? And he's like viewing it as like an experiment.
Yeah. There are times where he seems like horrified, but then there are also times where he's like, oh, it seems like I can climb around. I'm getting better at this. It's pretty good. You know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah. It's interesting having that perspective, you know, versus someone that would probably just be like, oh God, help me. I'm turning into a fly.
Oh, I'd be freaking out constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would not handle it well.
No. I don't think anyone will blame you.
Also, Gina Davis gets pregnant with a fly baby.
Yeah.
Because when they had sex, he was before, because, you know, he had the hair and stuff, so it was starting, and that's in his DNA. So she's got a fly baby in there, complete with a whole awful dream sequence of her giving birth to like a giant maggot thing, which is holy shit. That was, it definitely felt like it was going to be a dream sequence. So I wasn't like, felt like the rug was pulled out from under me, but it's still gross just seeing her screaming and this like bloody floppy thing coming out.
Yeah. Unintentionally, we watched two movies for Panning the Stream that both have people giving birth to weird things.
Yeah. Titane and this, like a weird body horror doubleheader. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Man, we talked to your mom. What was your, we saw your mom recently.
Oh yeah, I asked her if she watched Titane, because she always likes to watch what we're doing for the podcast. And she just goes, yes, I did.
I don't think there was much elaboration.
No, yeah, there wasn't. She was just scarred from it.
Yeah, the way she said it was very much like, oh yeah, I saw that thing. Like, no further comment. Sorry.
What the fuck?
I had a weird acid throat thing going on, and I was wondering if I could no-sell it, but no, that came right through. So at this point, I'm turning into a fly. At this point, I like to jump into my work, and I'm kind of a method podcaster, so yeah. So he wants to dilute the amount of fly in his body. This just seems like a bad plan. At a certain point, he's like, if I didn't just shove enough people into the pod and I get in the other pod, then it's like, if it's like eight people, one fly, then that's less fly. Like, it's just like this desperate, awful, like, I kind of wondered if the last act of this movie was going to be him, like, basically abducting people and shoving, like, okay, like this massive, like, remember at the end of Slither, where it was just that, like, just grotesque thing? It's like, I didn't know if we were going in that direction.
That would have been really interesting, I think he was trying to, like, use Tawny as one of those fusion people, right, to dilute the human.
That sounds right. Oh, yeah, he was trying to get her in, and she's like, no, I don't, I just met you, and I don't want to get inside this pod. I'm drunk.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he was drunk the first time.
Non-consensual gene fusion.
Yeah, it's no good. No good. But Gina Davis wants to get a abortion because she has a fly baby in her.
Actually.
Yeah, so they find a late night doctor. The doctor, pretty suspicious about, like, hey, it's the middle of the night. What's the deal here? And they don't want to be like, it's a fly. So luckily, they don't have to have that full conversation because the fucking fly just bursts through the window at the abortion clinic and just, like, grabs Gina Davis and scurries away. Like, he never gets full on, like, wings, like, so he didn't fly through the window. So I assume he's just, like, doing weird Dracula climbing and just, like, hopping through
maybe
stuff.
Maybe he can jump really high. He has been shown to, like, be very comfortable up and doing twists and turns and jumps and whatnot.
That's got to be it. Yeah. And so he, like, kidnaps her, basically brings her back to the place, the lab. And, so Stathis shows up to try to save her. Like, this is kind of the babyface turn for Stathis here, is he shows up. But then, God, fucking the fly just throws up on his hand and just long shots of his hand melting away, like the skin.
It's just like a little nub left over.
Yeah, and then, like, he pins him down and pukes on his fucking ankle so he can't walk. Like, this is gross shit.
Yeah, it's really, really bad.
Yeah, yeah, and he's about to puke, like, on his neck or something, and then Gina Davis gets a... Does she have the shotgun at this point?
I think so,
and they get in a scuffle, and she, like, pulls his jaw off, which just triggers the final boss transformation.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the effects here of, like, the eyes popping and melting down his face and stuff. It's just like, holy shit, I couldn't help but just, like, laugh. Like, this is insane.
It looked really incredible. There's, on the Wikipedia page for this movie, there's a photo, like, an image macro of a picture of Jeff Goldblum's face from, like, all the different phases of his transition.
Oh, yeah.
Leading up to the one you're describing. It's really... cool to see.
Well, because he's wearing like there's at first there's like prosthetics and stuff where you can see Goldblum's eyes and things like that, but then it's like you can tell he's not even like he's wearing like a full body latex suit at a certain point, and then it just goes into full blown like his human part just sheds and it's these giant eyes on the fly. Like, it looks so fucked up in this last form. Actually, I guess there's one more form to go, but oh man, it shoves Gina Davis into the thing with Stathis kind of incapacitated. And Stathis shoots the cables to kind of sever it to save Gina Davis. And then, oh, this is so fucked. So she's safe, but when the thing activates, he's trying to escape, the fly is, and he, like, fuses with the pod itself, like the actual, metal and everything. And so this thing that comes out the other side is the most grotesque, like, fucking... fly thing, but it can't even walk anymore, and it's got parts of like metal and everything attached to it. It is just the most fucked up thing.
Yeah, it's like a total mishmash of like metal pieces and weird, just disgusting, slimy flesh, and it's really disturbing.
And then it's a genuinely really sad ending, I think, because it's like basically the fly, like, you know, Gina Davis seems like she can't shoot him. And the fly, like, in its last, you know, moment of, like, just kind of still being cognizant of things, like, grabs the shotgun and places it to its own head and, like, please just end my suffering. And she shoots it and the movie ends. But I thought that was just so sad at the end because it's like Goldblum's character, while it takes us, I don't know, villainous. Yeah, I guess villainous is kind of the word. He doesn't seem like a bad guy, like maybe a cocky scientist and stuff at first. But, like, this was not his intention by any means. And, like, as it got worse... when he knew how, like, the insect brain works and stuff, he was, like, pleading with her, like, please leave. I'm afraid that the insect part of my brain is going to take over and attack you. Right. Like, he doesn't want to hurt her.
Right.
And, like, he's so sad about his humanity leaving, and he wants her to keep the baby. He's like, oh, at least there'd be some part of my humanity still around, because, like, he can tell he's rapidly going away, basically. And then by the end, just, like, putting the gun to his... like, it's just such a sad... movie, you
it
know,
is
at
sad.
The end, you know?
Yeah, it's weird to see something that's so, like, shocking visually and, you know, kind of grotesque to actually have an ending that's more, you know, I mean, it's not like the ending was mundane. It was just complete. It ends pretty abruptly in kind of completely crazy way. But it is very somber because you see their relationship growing and you know who they are as people, like at least their characters. And then
there's chemistry there, too.
Yeah, there is. And you know who he is. And like you were saying, he's not, a malevolent guy. It's just his mind is being overtaken by like a bug mind. And it is really sad because that was like ultimately a guy that he died ultimately. I mean,
because he was just trying to like he was a little too cocky about his experiment and he tried it before it was ready. But again, nothing evil until, this insect thing started taking over. Like, it's just a fascinating fucking movie, I think.
Yeah. I saw this when I was very, very young.
Yeah,
the only thing I really remembered about it was the fingernail part.
Oh, God.
But seeing it again, it's fantastic.
I had never seen it. Yeah. And I'd heard about it for so long, and I'd heard it's horrifying and stuff. But, like, somehow I had never actually seen the images and stuff of, like, what he looks like or these famous scenes. So, like, I went in pretty blind and just loved it. I thought this was
great. Oh, I'm so glad you loved it.
Oh, my God, yeah.
It was good for sure. I love, too, how long it was. I feel like it was the perfect length. Mm-hmm. It was only, like, an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy breezy to watch.
The full story. It doesn't feel rushed by any means. Mm-hmm. They made a sequel. Made The Fly 2, and the only person that came back was the guy who played Stathis, and it's a direct continuation. It's like she gives birth to the mutant son, and like the Barton Company is trying to get the telepods working again. It sounds like something I would not want to watch at all. It's like no Cronenberg, no Goldblum, no Gina Davis. Like, sounds like a bad Hollywood sequel. Mm-hmm. But man, this original. I know this is technically a remake of like a 50s classic, but like I was reading the plot of the first one. It seems like a completely different thing. Like, it seems like it's got the deal of like scientist turns into a fly, but it's just everything surrounding it feels very, very different. So
yeah, I heard that I didn't read about it to the extent that you did, but I heard that it wasn't like nearly as horrifying or like there was no body horror stuff really.
I can't even imagine in the 50s, like it would not look anything like this, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, huge fan of this movie now that I've seen it. I would love to see Eastern Promises. I think I really like
it's a great movie.
Cronenberg, from what I've seen. I've seen two movies and I like them both a lot. So good, fun times in this gross ass movie. So thanks to everyone for listening. I want to give a special shout out to our patrons. $5 tier a month. Very, very easy. Gives you access to our, access to our Discord.
Wow.
Ad free episodes.
Wow.
It gets you early episodes.
Oh.
And most importantly, for you, written by Bonk, you get yourself a Bonku Bonk. Do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we have?
This week, we are honoring our friend Cody.
Cody,
if you're out there, if you're listening, I hope this makes you smile. Cody peeled his skin and put it inside the jar for his pet spider.
What's that? Was that? That wasn't, you didn't like pick this one and put it on the fly right?
Go,
but
I
Cody peeling
order.
His skin? So this just serendipitously like became a skin peeling thing?
Sometimes the themes of our movie and the Bonkus align very serendipitously.
Well, that's very nice. Cody, I hope things go better for you than it did for Seth Brundle here in The Fly. I wish you the best, and thanks for being a patron.
Thank you.
Bonk.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining me each and every week here on this here podcast.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart.
And folks at home, we will be back next week with more Banning the Stream.
Bye.
Bye.